Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here, as always, with fellow beat writer Bob McGinn. It is Wednesday evening at the McGinn headquarters. How's it going, Bob?
Good, Mike. We have a rainy night here on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, we're battling the elements with this podcast. Your sliding door is open, and there's some rolling thunder in the background. This is a little risky tonight, but we do it for the fans. We do it for the listeners.
And Hart? Let in tonight, right?
Heart. Yes. Yeah. I recognize the band, but not the song. So tell everybody why you chose this selection. And first of all, tell them what song it was.
Straight On, 1979 or 8, something like that. Two Wilson sisters. They sing pretty good, huh?
No doubt about it.
Whew. I mean, kind of on the shades of Janis Joplin or who else are great female rockers?
Rockers?
Pat Benatar.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Good song.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Where'd it go on the charts? Did it go anywhere?
Number 15 in 78.
Okay. 78.
It's not Magic Man or Barracuda.
How old were you in 78, Bob?
Old enough.
Okay.
She can sing.
Definitely.
Wow. Man.
My favorite
That's
Heart
Anna
song.
Anna vocals.
My favorite Heart song is "Crazy on You."
Yeah,
yeah,
it's good too.
Good song.
Very good.
All right, so let's get into some football here. The last time we saw the Packers in a game was Sunday night in Minneapolis at the new U.S. Bank Stadium. They fell to the Vikings 17-14, and it was an interesting game for a lot of different reasons, and I think the most obvious one, the one that caught everybody's glaring attention, was the subpar play and the turnovers by Aaron Rodgers. Three fumbles, one interception. It was not his finest moment, Bob.
No, let's look at the fumbles first, Mike. I wrote a story about him maybe 4 years ago, 3 years ago. His refusal to fumble, he felt... And he insisted to me that day that every fumble is avoidable at quarterback. He would not accept the fact that any fumble should happen, regardless of the hit, whether he's looking or not. He had unbelievable technique with his hands, always gripping the ball with two hands, even when he started running. Look at these fumble numbers, Mike. He fumbled early his first 2 years as a starter, but then, like, one. Two fumbles lost in 2010, 6-2, 2011, 5-1. These are all counting playoff games. 2012, 6-4, 2013, played 17 games, never lost a fumble, 5 total. 2014, they started to pick up. He was 12-3. Last year, 8-5. He had three fumbles in that Arizona regular season game.
That was when the offensive line was decimated by injuries.
Aaron says he never gives himself an excuse.
I'm just saying.
All right. He had never had more than two fumbles in a game until that Arizona game. And now he had three the other night. He's had 2 3 fumble games in six games. It's a big thing. I mean, I used to absolve quarterbacks of fumbles. Far fumble a lot. His predecessors fumbled a lot, and I just kind of figured, well, it's part of the job of playing QB. But Aaron really opened my eyes to a lot of these things, and I went right along with him. He raised the bar, and I did too. So you just cannot fumble the ball anymore in these situations. The first one, he skipped away from 54 Kendricks on the interior blitz, right? The line missed it. He did a great job eluding it. Turned his back, trying to hop away, and then he gets hit. Should he have taken the sack right there?
I was just going to ask you the same thing. Is there a point in time where he just has to go down and say, let's cut the losses now, instead of trying to fight and scratch and claw for everything and risk more?
Easy for us to say, but I wouldn't say it, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. All right, the next one is when Bulaga got beat on the blind side by Robeson, right? Let's just talk about that one. I got the order screwed up.
Right.
Robeson came around the corner. The ball was held 3.8 seconds, a little long, and he got him from the blind side and he hit the ball. I mean, he's getting ready to throw the ball there, right? Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah,
I think so. I don't think so. I think he was jogging. Like, wasn't he shifting around in the pocket? Because it was low. The ball was, like, waist height. So I didn't think he was getting ready to throw.
Oh, okay. So not real good ball security on that one, right?
No.
Yeah, okay. And then the scramble, which I'm out of order, but the scramble. How did you see that?
Boy, I'm trying to... Okay, so I see he scrambles forward and they get it from behind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So, I don't know. That one's a tough one to me because, again, you're asking him to see a guy that's behind him, but it was terrible the way he was holding the football and, you know, arms, you know, ball out away from his body and all that.
Yeah.
So, in terms of the way he was carrying it, it was terrible. But, again, it is hard to see guys behind you.
Should he have slid? It was a little crowded to slide right there.
I agree.
Yep. He loves being an athlete.
No doubt. There's all those stories about him being ultra-competitive and pick up basketball and any sport you can think of.
You can tell when he scores a touchdown the way he feels about it. And he should. He's 32 years old. He's in tremendous shape. I mean, remember we were talking about his running in the Jacksonville game? He looks great.
He does.
He's still quick. He's still fast. But he can't fumble there. All right, now let's go to the interception, right, Mike?
So this was the game clincher.
Yep.
Third and 14 with about, what, a minute 40 to go or something in that range?
Yeah.
And if the Packers pick up a first down, the drive continues. They need a field goal to tie. And Rodgers sort of throws over to his left toward Devontae Adams, who's covered by Milwaukee native Trey.
Kenosha
native Trey right. Waynes.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I agree it was a poorly thrown ball. Underthrown, not a lot of zip. He didn't step into it in the pocket. He threw it sort of flat-footed, and Waynes comes in and picks it off to seal the game. So what did you see from that when you went back and watched it? We just watched it a few minutes ago here, too.
Okay, so Adams ran a post-corner, I guess you could call.
Something like that, yeah.
He made a really nice move inside, and then a tiny, tiny stumble out of Adams as he came out of that break.
I agree. A little bit small. Yep. A little small drag of the foot.
And then he's racing towards the sideline.
Correct.
The ball's underthrown. Floats. Do you fault Adams at all?
No.
2%? 1%?
I don't know. I mean, we talked about this before we turned the podcast on, and my response to Bob was, well, if he wants to just literally clothesline the guy and take him out so that there's no way he catches it, then yeah, okay, you can fault him for that. But reasonably, within the context and confines of the rules, I did not see anything really that he could have done. What do you think?
I mean, I don't know how they practice running that route, but... I don't know. One scout, you know, he said Waynes played it differently. He was kind of soft, and on that one he was really aggressive and tough. Although I wouldn't say he was soft during the game. Waynes played pretty tight. He played well.
Too tight?
Yeah, tight. Two penalties? Three? I don't know.
Four.
Did he?
I'm pretty sure. He definitely had three. I know that.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure he ended up with four.
All right, so they lose by three. Let's go back to the third quarter.
Okay.
When they would have had... Crosby with a 32-yard field goal attempt, right?
Yeah, it was fourth and two, right?
Fourth and two at the 14.
Okay.
The score is 10-7.
I think so.
Yep. It's kind of a defensive struggle. I mean, I don't think at that point McCarthy thought Sam Bradford was going to put up a whole lot more points.
Very true.
And maybe he should have thought that his offense wasn't going to score a whole bunch more against that D. Right? That didn't look like it was going to be in the cards.
Right.
Four plays earlier, on a third and eight, the Packers got a king-size break when Rodgers fumbled in traffic. And Jared Cook, hustling, hops on that ball for the recovery.
So there were four fumbles by the Packers, right? Three Rodgers, one Adams.
Right.
And three of them were recovered by the Packers. That's unbelievably fortuitous. And I don't know what Zimmer thought of this, but on one of them, Captain Munnerlyn tried to scoop it up rather than just falling on it, and that certainly cost him. So it's they were very, very lucky in that sense to recover 75% of their fumbles.
Yeah, okay. That stuff does even out. Remember Allen Robinson down at the 15 in that Jacksonville game?
Yeah.
Five guys there, and he gets his own fumble, you know.
Right.
But you're right. All right, Mike. So it's first and 10 on the 22. They're in a position to tie the game, right?
Yeah.
In a defensive struggle. All right, they run Starks for minus two on a toss. He hits Richard Rodgers for 10. He throws a fade incomplete to Jordy Nelson. Fourth and two officially. Really, I think it's about a yard and a half.
Okay.
So McCarthy likes his play. He's got a 12-play drive. He thinks the defense is tiring. He suggested that. He's got a good play, he says, right? And he goes for it. I don't even ever have strong feelings about these decisions. I almost never do. On this one, I did immediately. I said to Silverstein, who was sitting next to me, and you were a seat down, I said, what? Just take the points. Now, all right. I think, Mike, the Packers have a bunch of analytics guys now, right? They're into it like everybody else is. And maybe the analytics people are telling McCarthy all week long, hey, go on fourth down. Possible.
Definitely possible, yeah.
All right, what did you think at the time? Did it strike you as a not the right call, or didn't you really have a strong feeling? Like
at the time, I didn't really have a strong feeling. And given McCarthy's penchant for trusting his offense in other situations, you know, over the years, we've seen him go for different fourth downs. Mm-hmm. It didn't necessarily surprise me in that sense of it, just the decision to go for a fourth and two at the 14-yard line. If you remove the context, it didn't surprise me. When you consider the context, and again, I didn't really think about this until after the game, it did strike me as strange for two reasons. One, as you said, take the points, tie the game, and take your chances with a quarterback in Sam Bradford that has been there for, you know, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks?
And your defense.
So that was one thing that surprised me. The other thing is, if you want to run it, fine. Run it on fourth and two. But if you're really looking for a guy that can plow forward, why Starks and not Lacy? I don't know.
I don't know either. So, Robeson was unblocked. He comes off Starks' right. Treader doesn't do a good job with 98.
Yep, Linval Joseph.
Starks is hit. Do you fault Starks for not getting that extra foot?
A little bit.
Me too.
I also thought the spot was pretty bad, to be honest with you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I thought that when Starks gets to his most forward point, it looked to me that he was dead even with that marker. And I thought the spot was a little bit poor, if I'm being honest. But yes, I do fault Starks. I mean, it's what, a foot? You got to put your head down and get that yard.
All right, let's go to Mike Zimmer's decision in the first half. So the Vikings are down 7-0, and they really got nothing going. And they finally start throwing the ball on their fourth possession early in the second quarter. And they move about 45 yards, and they have fourth and one, not two, one, at the Green Bay 18. And he never hesitates. And I write down gamble in my red right here. Now here, he's down seven. He's got nothing going on. The Vikings played horrible in the first quarter, right? I said to Tom, I said, this thing, Green Bay's going to win this game after about 10, 12 minutes. Vikings were horrible, right?
Really bad.
Bradford was brutal.
The offensive line couldn't do anything for Peterson. It was just a mess.
So he goes for it. And Randall lines up late, coming across against the motion against Diggs, and it's a four-yard completion. Now, is it fair to...
That was fourth and four, not fourth and one, wasn't it?
No, one.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Let's... I don't have...
I thought it was fourth and four. I really did. Okay.
Two incompletes and an 8 or 9 yard pass.
Hmm. Okay. Then it must have been fourth and one, yep.
Yeah. All right, is it fair to criticize McCarthy and not Zimmer?
I think Zimmer had a better play call.
And I think Zimmer had more reason to go for it.
Sure.
He had a dead team.
Right, and you finally get into a place on the field where you can score and your offense has looked like garbage.
He's got a bad kicker.
That was the first quarter or second quarter?
Second.
Okay.
Mike, he's got Blair Walsh
attempting a
36-yard field goal. The guy's coming off a horrible game down in wherever it was, Tennessee.
Yep.
Crosby's automatic. Zimmer can't be too confident in that guy.
No, I agree.
So I think it is fair to criticize McCarthy despite what Zimmer did earlier.
Yeah, and you're right. It was fourth and one. I was mistaken on that one.
Was it a 9-yard pass the play before, Mike?
Eight. It says 8 yards.
And is it fourth and two then? Or fourth and one?
It went from third and ten
to
fourth and one. There was a fumble.
Yeah, Thielen caught an 8-yard pass.
Fumbled.
Yep.
And got his own fumble back.
There's another lucky deal, right?
Right.
The strip by Gunter.
Yes.
Yep, right. All right, so that's... What else do we want to talk about the Viking game?
Well, we mentioned Demaryius Randle, and he had a very, very, very long evening against Stephon Diggs. So before we discuss the specifics of that, in your scouting report, you talked to people about this offense. What did scouts reasonably think of Diggs?
Tough guy, feisty. Nobody would ever think of him as a number one. I mean, he's their number one, but geez, he's a two at best, more likely a three on a good team. Nobody would consider him that. 9 for 182. I don't know. The other receiver, Charles Johnson, non-entity, and you got Thielen in the slot.
I kind of like Thielen. I don't think he's a bad player.
He must not be.
I mean, he's a heck of a player on teams. We know that. Special teams.
Yeah.
And you look at his production. I mean, he matched Cobb.
Yeah.
He matched Cobb in terms of what he gave him.
Better.
Yeah.
Cobb's catches were from the backfield or just little things.
And his salary's a little bit lower, if I can guess there.
Yeah. So, all right. So what do you want to say about Randle and Diggs?
Well, I was kind of surprised at the way it played out. Randle is the type of guy, and I'm sure we've discussed this on the podcast before, his demeanor is just, I mean, it's swagger personified, you know? He's this young kid that's just unabashed with his confidence, and it doesn't fade. I mean, you and I could go outside, and I could beat him for a touchdown route, and he wouldn't even care. He'd come up the next play as if it never happened. He's got the perfect disposition for a cornerback in that regard. And he's sort of a guy I thought that would kind of really want this opportunity. You know, Shields is down with the concussion. It's national TV. He gets a chance to be the number one corner. God, did he fall on his face. You wrote it in your rating. There were so many times where it looked like he was just content to play trail coverage. You know, just let guys go by him and then run with them down the field. And I just didn't get it. Like, I mean, he's fast, but he's not that fast.
Right.
And so
exactly.
I didn't understand it. You know, why not try and play a little bit closer to the man instead of playing? Honestly, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the way Shields plays. Hmm. Shields lets guys go by him, but he's 4-3. Randle's 4-4,
something like that.
Yeah, so it's a difference in speed, and I don't know. It just kind of seemed weird to me. What did you think?
I mean, Demaryius did not play that well down the stretch last year.
That's correct.
The last month. He played real well before that for about 4 or 5 weeks.
Amari Cooper torched him.
Right. And then he cost the playoff game.
Right.
Which he, to his credit, admits immediately whenever you bring it up.
Well, now he does. Oh. In the immediate aftermath, he said it wasn't his fault.
Did he?
Yeah.
That day?
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay. That's not good. I don't know. Diggs looked really special, didn't he? Jeez.
He really did.
The catch out in the fingertips and the skinny post running the ball. And
The touchdown catch was impressive.
Yeah.
Not a bad player.
For what is he, a fourth round pick?
Yeah, fourth or fifth.
Five maybe. Yeah.
Not bad.
They don't have a whole lot of wide receiver. Treadwell can't get on the field. So
here's a question that was posed, I think, yesterday by somebody on Twitter, or maybe it was Monday, and they said, okay, Randle gets beat 2, 3, 4 times by Diggs. Why not try somebody else on him? Why not try Rollins and then put Randle in the slot, which Randle played the slot against Jacksonville? Why not try Gunter? I'm not saying these matchups necessarily make a lot of sense, but just, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, you know?
Well, Randle didn't travel with Diggs, did he?
My impression of it when I went back and watched the game is that to begin the game, he did not, because he covered Thielen on those plays there.
Mm-hmm.
Gave up two completions with Thielen. But after that, I felt like he was on him the whole game.
Hmm. I never looked charted myself.
I guess what I'm trying to think about is I can't remember. So the other corner was Gunter on the outside.
Yeah.
I can't think of any times when Gunter was on off the top of my head. I don't think I can picture Gunter on Diggs at all.
Might be right.
So I think that after that first drive, he might have trailed him.
Yeah, the early completions to Thielen.
Just lazy coverage.
Soft.
Yeah, real soft.
What was he doing?
I don't know.
Challenge the guy. I mean, you know, Thielen ran around, I think, 4.49 out of that small school. All right, so that takes care of that.
You got to talk about the D-line.
Mike Daniels was the man.
Some were saying it was his best game in a Packer uniform.
God, he's had some good ones. I wouldn't go that far.
Close to it?
But I can't even. I'm not sure. But he was very good, yeah.
Really good.
Yep.
And before his injury, LaTroy Guyon was good as well. Against the run. Blasted into the backfield on a couple of those plays. And the two of them just looked like they were just going to walk over that offensive line for a little bit.
Yep. So he got hurt after 8 snaps, did some good things, and then Kenny Clark came on. Now, you talked to Kenny today.
Yeah.
And he played 38 snaps, Mike. What was the theme of the conversation?
So it was kind of interesting. Kenny had been a guy that through the first, month or so that he was here, he didn't really talk in a lot of detail. He would answer your questions fine, very polite guy. But he didn't tend to elaborate. He would give you his 2 or 3 sentences, and then he would stop, as opposed to somebody giving you, a full paragraph, 30 seconds, or whatever the case may be. But today he was kind of different, and I was asking him just sort of, what was it like to get in there and play 38 snaps after playing more of a bit part against Jacksonville. And he kind of opened up a little bit, and it was really interesting. This is one of his quotes. He said, "I just feel like from preseason games to Jacksonville, I was just so excited and ready to go, but I was still kind of like, man, I'm in the NFL. I was kind of feeling it out. I was feeling out the games too much." And so what he said basically was that he was going into these games tentatively because he was overwhelmed by the spectacle and the moment and all this kind of stuff. And then this was very interesting. He said his very first play was a screen. It was that screen to Mercedes Lewis that went deep down the sideline. He said that made him even more timid. And I said, "What do you mean?" And this is his quote. "When a D lineman sees a screen, that automatically makes you want to back off. I feel like I needed to have that attack mentality now and come out striking and not feel anybody out. Throughout the game, I settled in, felt a lot better, felt a lot more comfortable out there, made some plays." Kind of interesting.
Very much so.
And then I asked him, what changed going into this Minnesota week, if anything? And this was where it got very interesting to me. He said he completely overhauled his routine. He's been in the league, 5 minutes? And he's already changing the way he prepares for games. And this is his quote. He said, "I had been telling myself all last week that I needed to really turn myself on and really just get my head mentally into the game. That whole last week of preparation," meaning getting ready for the Vikings, "I just wanted to start off attacking from the first play to the last. I got a lot of good film that day. I saw tremendous strides from preseason in the Jacksonville game to that game. I'm excited for everything and the way things are going so far." Pretty introspective, I thought.
Yeah.
Now, when I first told you about this before the podcast and I gave you sort of his explanation of the moment and sort of, you said right away, I could see that. I mean, have you seen this with young guys before that they kind of maybe first round pick, the pressure on them, all that kind of stuff factors in?
I've never really heard anybody say that quite like that, Mike.
But it's
reasonable. We all can relate.
Right, exactly.
You played high school sports. So did I. We all had first jobs. You get overcome by the moment, right? You just can't function. You got to think, all right, I can do this, or all right, I've done this before.
Right.
Try to instill some, get back the confidence in yourself. But I'm sure you walk into the floor of those NFL stadiums, exhibition game or not, it's a little bit different. Now, he played at UCLA. He did. At Augsburg or something, but.
Augsburg? Where'd you pull that one from?
I don't know. Minnesota, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Never even heard of it.
Reading the newspapers over in the Twin Cities, Mike. D3 over there.
Okay.
Augsburg. I think it's in Minneapolis, but maybe it's outside. I'm not sure.
So this injury to Guyon, you know, we don't really know the severity of it. We just know that it's a knee problem. It's got to be a concern for the coaching staff, right? I mean, they only had five bodies to begin with. Lowry and Clark were really young and really raw, and before this last game, Clark hadn't really done a whole lot of anything. Now we're down to four guys as it stands right now, although they do have an open roster spot. Man, I mean, can they play Kenny Clark the same way they wanted to play Guyon? You know, give him that same... can they apportion the reps the same way?
Yeah, they're going to have to. Like, who's on the practice squad?
Brian Price.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so, I mean, he played pretty decent.
He did.
He had a strip at the end of that Kansas City game, a forced fumble. Maybe they do something with him. Who knows? Lowry? Ringo?
Ringo only played like five or six snaps against the Vikings.
But, you know, it's going to be a total sub-package game.
Against Detroit,
there'll be no base.
Right.
Lions can't run, really, without, you know. I mean, they'll try this Washington
they
guy.
They couldn't run with Abdullah, really, either.
Well, they've had production they've had in the run game.
A little bit.
I think they've been over 100 each time, Mike.
Really?
I'm not sure, but I think so.
Huh.
Yeah.
I just remember last year they couldn't do anything in the running game when they came here, and they still won.
They still won, yeah.
Interesting.
Here we go. The Lions have 253 yards rushing.
But Abdullah was hurt so early, so who got the rest of them?
He had 101, Riddick 82, Stafford 36.
All right.
Washington 32.
Okay.
So they've run pretty well. 5.3.
They're not going to... They can't run Riddick 20 carries, can they?
No.
Yeah, okay.
No. But this Washington guy...
Yeah.
No, he didn't do it for the Washington Huskies at all, but he's got good speed and he's almost 230.
Okay.
He didn't look bad.
Well, we started talking about the Lions a little bit, so we're going to take a short break for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll come back with the scouting report, and we'll go through the Lions in depth.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
So as promised, we'll get into the scouting report here. You've talked to scouts. You've watched the tape. Tell us about the Lions.
So the Lions come in as a 7.5-point dog. They won last year in Green Bay as a 10.5-point dog after losing 24 in a row in the state of Wisconsin, longest in NFL history. That's a bunch, Mike.
Yes, it is.
They won that game 18-16. The three scouts I spoke to, they all picked the Lions, 1-14, 1-3, 1-7.
No, they all picked the Packers.
Packers, excuse me. All right, let's look at the Lions' offense.
Okay.
Jim Bob Cooter took over the play-calling coordinator job midseason last year. People say he's done a heck of a job. He's about 50% no huddle. Stafford loves it. Like Rodgers, he can do a lot at the line of scrimmage. Let's start with Stafford. He was very impressive in the Tennessee game. He looks to me like he slimmed down. He had a 24-yard run. That's the longest of his career.
Did you see his ugly attempt at a slide, though?
Horrid.
Oh, man. He tried to go, like, knees first. It was just bad.
This one scout said, yeah, you ought to get enlarged knee pads now. Stafford, 35 on the Wunderlich. Still, you know.
Smart guy.
Impulsive, boneheaded mistakes. But he's cut him back. The pick at the end of the game, which was horrible.
Right.
First in 212 pass attempts.
Good for him.
Yeah. He's got a fantastic arm. I mean, he kind of throws it the way Rodgers used to throw it all the time.
He can make every throw.
He can.
There's no doubt.
And Rodgers could still do that if he would step into the throws more often. Okay. Stafford has cut back on his mistakes. He takes a lot of hits. He's been pretty durable after showing all those surgeries in the beginning of his career. I think he's matured, and I think he's a better player. I think he's constantly improved. He's certainly better than Cutler. He's better than Bridgewater right now. He's better than Bradford. So he's a threat. And as one scout said, the way Stafford goes is the way they go. That's their team. Can he spring an upset here? Yes, he can.
He definitely can.
Even without Calvin Johnson.
No doubt.
All right, let's look at his weapons. He's got Golden Tate. Tate's not really a one. Marvin Jones, the ex-Bengal, he's not a one either. They're both twos. They're both pretty good. You know, Tate, like a running back after the catch. Boy, he's hard to bring down. Small catching radius. He's only 5'10". He still can run. He still gets deep. They still go to him deep. He had two drops. Jones had two drops against Tennessee in their one-point defeat. And Anquan Boldin had two drops.
And Ebron's had lots of drops.
His whole life.
Yeah.
Marvin Jones, 6'2", spindly kind of, 199. His dad was the middle linebacker from Florida State, first-round pick. Marvin, he's kind of acrobatic. I think he can be jammed at the line against hard press, which you'll get from Green Bay. He's pretty good. He's a pretty solid player. They paid him
not bad.
20, I can't remember, 5 years, $40 million. I can't remember the guarantee.
20.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Anquan Boldin. They're desperate, and on July 28th, they signed him off the street. The 49ers did not bring him back. Boldin, I remember a secondary coach telling me this 2 or 3 years ago. In the first series of every game, he will do everything he can to intimidate the cornerbacks. He'll run right at them in running plays. Now, you watch him, Mike. On running plays, he will just try to decapitate people right away. He wants to impose his will as a wide receiver on the perimeter. He's crazy.
That's what you do at the start of the podcast, yeah. Impose your will.
Mike, he's a violent person. Now, he got nailed twice for penalties in this game, both for being overly physical. He had two drops, which is surprising. You know something, Mike? 13 years ago, he ran 4.65 out of Florida State. God.
I don't know what he would run now. 4.8?
You'd need a sundial to time him, Mike.
Yeah, he's really slow. But he had two touchdowns. One of them called back by penalty.
Right. He's doing all right. He's in the slot, usually.
He's such a strange slot receiver, you know? I mean, think about Cobb and then think about him. Think about Aberderis and then think about him. All right, he used to be a number one.
Yeah. So Bob Quinn, the GM from the Patriots, he's got all these old guys on this team. He's building the team like Belichick and not like Ted Thompson. All right, number four, Andre Roberts used to almost kind of start for the Cardinals 3-4 years ago. He's okay. All right, tight end Ebron, right? Called a coach killer by a scout who went on and on about the guy. He's immature, bit of a loose cannon. He can do all that stuff downfield a la JerMichael Finley. You've seen it, Mike. But again, he'll drop the ball. There's penalties. He'll make a great catch behind him as he did against Tennessee for like 28 or something. And then he'll push off in the end zone or do some hole. He's not a very good blocker. That's Eric Ebron. 10th pick in that great 2014 draft. Kari Lee, the ex-Bear, claiming on waivers he'll block. All right, let's go to the running backs. Amir Abdullah. He had a good start on IR, probably for the year.
Returned a kick 101 yards against the Packers or whatever it was.
In that game, in the Green Bay game last year?
Yeah. Right. Okay. Second half kickoff.
Yep. That really turned it around, didn't it?
Yeah,
I remember now. Okay.
He got tackled at like the 1 yard line, I think. Micah Hyde, if I remember correctly, saved the touchdown.
So he's a small guy. He's not a heavy duty back, but he and Riddick were splitting time.
Right.
All right, so now it's Theo Riddick. He had 80 catches last year. One of the better third down receiving backs in the league.
No doubt about it.
Shifty, quick.
Yep.
Hard to match up on. He could put a hurt on Martinez or, you know, Ryan.
He went to Notre Dame, right? Riddick?
Yeah.
When you were doing your draft series this past year, did you get scouts that compared him to C.J. Procise, the new guy coming out of Notre Dame? Okay.
No, never came up.
They both played running back and receiver at Notre Dame, so I didn't know if there were going to be some similarities there. But Riddick he's like a receiver that plays running back, kind of.
Yeah. He's averaging 3.2 career as a rusher. I don't see him doing a whole lot of rushing. Now, they got two bigger backs. They got Dwayne Washington, a seventh-round pick from Washington, 4.47 at 223 coming out last year, a seventh-round pick. He had two nice runs against Tennessee. He really did. So I don't know. I mean, he's a young back. Green Bay defense has to intimidate him, get the ball out, do that. Another guy who's going to play is Zach Zenner, and he is from South Dakota State. Tremendous athlete, big testing athlete. He wasn't drafted. A lot of people thought he would. 5'11", 221. He's a pretty good player. I mean, and I think he's going to get his shot. He made the team, surprisingly enough, last year, And so he's going to be in there. I think they'll have three active, and then they got a fullback, Michael Burton. He's okay.
So what's with the O-line?
All right. Well, they're all draft picks, either three in the first and two in the third. And really, they got problems. They still got a lot of problems. They moved Riley Reiff from left tackle, where his short arms were not good, to right tackle this year. And he was pretty good in the first game, but he really struggled in this second game. I don't know. I think he's probably a guard, but they need him a tackle in the worst way. Their best player is Larry Warfer, a big, wide-body guy. Not great, but a solid player, four-year starter. Taylor Decker, first-round pick. You know, really, he's a right tackle, Mike. He even though he's 6'7", he does not have long arms. His feet are okay. They're not great. I don't know. Eventually, he's going to be the right tackle, and Reiff, I think, will be a guard, and then they'll have to get another left. That's just my thought. Who knows? All right, Laken Tomlinson. That's Martin Mayhew's, one of his worst picks. Takes that guy, trades up for him, I believe it was, late in the first at 32. Came from Duke. Boy, the way he's playing the other day, I'd take Lucas Patrick over him. His old teammate at Duke.
Okay.
He looks like a mauler, but he's not. He doesn't have feet.
I bet he's got 2 feet.
You do not see aggressiveness, Mike. He's a liability. A first-round pick at guard. If you're going to do that, you better make sure this guy is a killer, you know, like Zach Martin or DeCastro or something. You can't go screwing up with a guard in the first round. That gets you fired, and it did. Travis Swanson, third-round pick a couple years ago, replaced Dominic Raiola, the guy there for a dozen years. Swanson wasn't very good last year, and I don't really see him improved. He's got no power. He's on the ground a lot. I think Graham Glasgow, the third-round pick this year, it's a matter of time before he takes over at center. He's got to because they can't really function. Swanson's a decent athlete, but with no power, how are you going to hold up?
Right.
I mean, if Guyon was playing in this game, boy, that'd be Katie bar the door.
Yeah.
All right, so we got the whole offense, right?
Yep.
Okay. You know, people really think a lot of Terrell Austin, the defensive coordinator. Remember talking to him at the Super Bowl when he was at the DB coach at Baltimore? Very impressive guy. DB coach for 10 years. He's had some head coaching interviews in the NFL. So he doesn't blitz much. It's a 4-3, one-gap scheme. He likes to play man when he can. All right. Probably the best player on the team, Ziggy Ansah. I doubt he plays, Mike.
I agree. That foot injury did not look very good.
Third play of the game, he goes down against Tennessee. It's a tremendous blow. I mean, you know, him against Bakhtiari would have been a tremendous show in itself. He's gone. And really, there goes their pass rush. Now, to their credit, they're playing their butts off.
They really are. I was going to say, I remember reading your scouting report in print, and I actually thought some of the guys competed pretty darn well against the Titans.
I agree. All right, so who replaces Ziggy? This will be number 61, Kerry Hyder. He's been banging around trying to make a team. This is his third year, and they had to keep him. He had 3 sacks in the exhibition season. He's got another one the other day on hustle. He's kind of undersized, bad body, as the scouts say, but he keeps bringing it. And Balaga and Bakhtiari, they can't really sleep on this guy.
No, I agree.
He's going to bring it. Devin Taylor, 6'7". At the other end, he's been around for 4 years. He's okay.
I kind of liked him against the Titans. He was the one guy. I thought he kept getting into the backfield, and I don't know.
He was better in this one than the first game.
Fair enough.
He gets out-leveraged because of his height. He's thin leg. Okay. The third end, Wallace Gilberry plays out there. You know, the guy's kind of got a knack. He's like 30 years old. I remember with the Bengals. He's been around, and he's got 31 sacks. I mean, he's a little over the hill, but he brings it. He plays with a lot of emotion. All right, that's the outside guys. Inside, Haloti Ngata at nose. He's not what he was, but, you know, he's still in shape. He still pursues. I mean, he runs around. And if you miss him or he dumps you at the line of scrimmage on a drop back pass, he will get to the quarterback pretty quick.
Do you think he's intrigued by this game because of the struggles that Shredder had with Linval Joseph?
That's a good point, Mike. He probably is. He sees opportunity, as everybody in Packerland says.
Now, I know we've talked about this before, but it's a different class when you talk about Shredder's strength versus Lindsley's strength, correct?
Yeah. Shredder's more of an athlete.
Right. Lindsley's, I mean, the guys, when you talk to the other offensive linemen or Rodgers about him, they talk about just how monstrous he is and powerful.
Yeah. So, but I don't think Shredder's strength is that bad.
Okay.
I really don't. All right, the three technique. It's not exactly Mr. Sue. This is Tyron Walker. You know, he came from the Saints last year, and he looked pretty good early last year, but then he, I don't know, wrecked his leg out for the year, and I just don't see that same burst or quickness. Kind of liked him early last year. All right, so he plays some. Now, A'shaun Robinson from Alabama, the 46th pick, the rookie, he plays. He didn't do anything against Indy, and he was okay in this game against Tennessee. He's just learning how to play. He's not there yet. And the backup to Nada is Kyree Thornton, 99, the Packers' third-round pick in 2014. Kyree lost a bunch of weight. Boy, Mike, when he first got in there against Tennessee, he's up against Chance Warmack, their first-round pick at right guard. Holy cow. Thornton beat him for a tackle for loss.
Yep.
And then a play or two later on the goal line, he drives him back 5 yards. He didn't get credit for the safety. Taylor did, but he probably would have got it.
Right.
I thought,
he looked
wow,
pretty good.
What's going on? But then he petered out.
No doubt.
Nah, that long run by Murray, he got knocked 2 gaps off of that thing, 67-yard run by DeMarco Murray. So I don't know, but he's resurrected his career and he's still in the league. More power to him, you know?
Yep.
Okay, that's the D line.
Now let's get to the mess that they've got at linebacker.
Well, let's get the injury report. Okay, Mike, so we know Tahir Whitehead will be the middle backer.
Yep, he'll play Whitehead. every snap.
He's fast, tough, and small. He makes mistakes in coverage.
Right. Hard hitter, too.
Yep. All right, DeAndre Levy, Milwaukee Vincent. He and Wisconsin Badgers. A great player in 2013 and 14, Mike. I mean, the heart and soul of that defense. They said Sue was. I would argue Levy was. Tremendous player, played every snap, run and pass, big plays, unreal. Should have been in the Pro Bowl. I don't think he ever made it. All right, now what's he got, Mike? Let's look at our sheet here. He's got a quad.
Didn't practice today.
Didn't play last week.
I'm going to say the chances are slim.
I agree. All right. On the other outside, we got Kyle Van Noy with a calf injury. He left in the third quarter. Van Noy's terrible.
I think he's out for this game anyway.
He's terrible anyway. Okay. No loss.
All right.
He hasn't done anything in 3 years, like a second-round pick, another one of those Mayhew specials. All right. What do they got? They got Antoine Williams. He's a rookie free agent from Georgia Southern.
But he didn't practice today either with a hamstring injury. I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to have to play. They can't play base, I guess. I don't know.
All right. They got Thurston Armbrister.
What a great name.
Started 3 games for Jacksonville last year. He's a rookie free agent in 2015 out of the University of Miami. Runs 4.68. He looks slow to react in his, like, 10 snaps or so against Tennessee. All right. Now, they put Xavier Gooden, the former Bear draft pick. I think he's from the Bears. He's on the practice squad as of yesterday. He could start. He could be activated and start.
I heard somebody on Twitter wondering if they would move Miles Killebrew down. And for those of you who don't know, Killebrew was one of those oversized safeties a little bit. Hard hitter in college. Small school, right?
Correct.
Yeah. What school did he go to?
I forgot. Southern Utah.
Yeah, okay. Southern Utah. Big hitter. Would basically be sort of like what the Rams did with Barron last year, but moving him just from safety to linebacker. I don't know. Do you think that's possible?
No. I checked it. He's never practiced at linebacker this year.
Wow.
He's been slow to pick up the defense,
okay.
Slow to immerse himself in the NFL.
Had he picked it up quickly, do you think that's an option they would have considered?
I think so, definitely.
Yeah, okay.
At least he can run and hit.
Right, exactly.
All right, so Brandon Copeland finished the game. He's a defensive end guy from the Ivy League, pass rusher. He finished the game playing Sam Backer, and Mr. Armbrister was the weak backer. Mike, it's a joke.
It's not good.
How can you stop anybody with that?
I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
All right, the secondary.
Yeah.
Darius Slay is outstanding.
Agreed.
4-3-4, tough, feisty, cover you like heck. Not a ball hawk, though.
He held James Jones without a catch last year, I believe, right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yep.
All right, the other real good one is Glover Quinn. Had a tremendous interception, showed great range to the boundary against the Titans. I think he tackles pretty good.
Is he a top 10 safety? Top 15?
Yeah, maybe 15 to 20.
Okay. We spoke to him last year on one of the conference calls.
Yeah.
God, what an entertaining guy. Just really, really,
really?
Interesting. Yeah, real well-spoken, interesting guy, engaging.
Mm. Wow.
I could see why Caldwell mentions him as a leader all the time. Mm. He's got that personality to him.
He ran 4.51 out of New Mexico, where he also played some cornerback. So that's okay. Why he can kind of match up at times.
Okay.
All right, the other corner, he just became a starter right around the time the Lions won at Lambeau last year, Mr. Nevin Lawson, 24. Remember across the way in front of that Lion bench how scrappy he was with receivers
last year?
He's only 5'10". He ran 4.47. He gets turned, but I don't know. I mean, he's below average starter, but he's not bad.
Right.
Boy, Mike, if you went back and looked at the starting strong safeties for Detroit in the last 10 years, there could be 20, 25 names. I mean, it's just unreal. Now it's Tavon Wilson. He was a Bill Belichick special. Second-round pick from Illinois, I believe, right? Yeah, what a shocker that was about 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Yeah, he played out teams in New England. Bob Quinn, the GM, you know, was in New England with him. Took the guy. And he and Bush have been kind of switching off. Wilson's a better player. Wilson's a great-looking physical specimen. I can see where the Patriots fell in love. Almost 6 feet, 212, runs pretty good. So he's all right. Bush is the ex-Saint. He's been okay. The nickelback, Quandre Diggs, is a lot like Lawson. He's small, just not quite that fast. They want to play some man. So that's the Lion D. Special teams, Matt Prater is okay. Sam Martin leads the league in net punting average, but he's punted in two domes. Return game, looks like Andre Roberts, although they have Tate always on punt returns. They cover pretty well. So that's the Lions.
Anything else there? I think we got it.
Jim Caldwell, a Beloit, Wisconsin native.
Really? Did not know that.
Played in the state basketball tournament for Beloit Memorial.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
He's a pretty sharp guy. He's a real sharp guy. Yeah. He doesn't say much in his pressers, but this guy, he's got something to him. And, you know, some scouts really think the Lions this have a lot of fiber to them. And, you know, they finished strong last year. We'll see if Quinn keeps Caldwell. It's his call. It was a bit surprising that he kept him this year. Most GMs want their first new guy. You know, Phil Emery, I remember in Chicago, he retained the coach, and then he made a coaching change, and that didn't work. And, you know, I don't know. But, you know, when Ron Wolf took over here, he got a new coach. Ted Thompson waited a year with Sherman, then fired him. So we'll see what Quinn does. So that's the Lions.
All right. So we've gone through the Lions. We've discussed the Vikings. We'll take a few questions here before the podcast wraps up. I know you guys sent in a bunch of them. So we thank you for that. Let's see what we got here. Lots to choose from. Okay, here's one. It's directed to you.
Uh-oh.
This comes from Jack. Somebody named Jack. Where is Jack from? Let's see. Jack is from... Sorry, Jack, your Twitter account doesn't want to load right now, but it's a good question. Bob, when was the last time the Packers truly had a change of pace running back?
Well, Brandon Jackson would not be that. Damon Parker, maybe maybe you could call him that, 99-2000. Basil Mitchell, a small back. Vernon Morency. Noah Heron. Mike, you know all these players, right?
I don't know anybody you just named. I thought you were going to say Jonathan Franklin. That'd be the closest I could come to knowing
there
anybody.
You go. He would have been.
He would have been?
Yeah. 205-pounder. Okay. He would have been. And then his career ended. What was it? With a neck injury, I guess it was.
Yeah, neck, I believe.
Ron Wolf never liked small backs. Couldn't stand them. That's about all I can come up with.
All right, this question comes from Keith Aaron, another good one. Why has the run defense been so good? We got rid of the bigger D-line types the past few years. It seems counterintuitive. And you're right, the defensive linemen have changed size and shape over the years, but the difference is with the outside linebackers. They've gotten bigger and stronger and better against the run. Don't forget, Carl Bradford was drafted to be an edge rusher. And now you've got guys like Nick Perry, built totally different. You've got guys like Dayton Jones, built totally different. It's the body type outside to stop the run now. You know, our colleague Tom Silverstein wrote about it. The way these outside linebackers, or the Packers call them elephant rushers, are just so different than the outside linebackers they were drafting 4, 5, 6 years ago. You've seen it longer than I have, Bob. How drastically has it changed? If you go back to, say, 2008 and 2009, what did their outside linebackers look like? They were smaller, faster guys, right?
Well, the Capers came in 2009. He started out with Aaron Campman, a converted D lineman, so he was huge, 270. And then Matthews was drafted. But then, you know, then they had a void at the other side, and there was Eric Walden, who continues to start for the Colts, and he was a very tough run player. 250. Brad Jones, Zombo. Zombo had good size. Brad Jones didn't. So I think Morgan Burnett deserves a little credit, too, for the run defense. He's a good tackler.
He is.
Yep.
He definitely is. Let's see. What else do we have here? Well, this one, if we wanted to open up the media guide, we could get this one. You got the media guide?
Yes, sir.
Who is the career leader in tackles for the Packers, and who has, well, this second one I don't think we could get, who has the most tackles against the Packers? We might be able to do single game.
I don't think there's any tackling in this book.
Well, they don't have their own tackling? No?
Boy, but I don't think that's, I question it, Mike. I don't think there's anything about, yeah, there is.
Okay, there we go.
So what does he want?
Most career tackles for the Packers.
They started keeping this in 75.
Okay.
40 years. Mr. A.J. Hawk, 1118. John Anderson, 1020. Nick Barnett, 1014. Johnny Gray, 1001. Mike Douglas, 967. Nick Barnett's the single-season leader with 194. Criteria change on this, though, Mike. What's a tackle? What isn't? It's a shaky business, you know. I mean, I totally rely on what their coaches provide as opposed to press box totals. But, again, it's I don't really worry about it. I mean, but I use what the Packers provide completely. I trust them on that and go with it. But different staffs have judged different, you know, groups of players, so it's a little tough to compare.
Well, I think we've reached the end here. We're at 53 minutes. We appreciate you guys sending in the questions. We had a lot of repeat questions, which is why I couldn't necessarily answer a whole lot of them. Most of them were variations of the ones we just mentioned, except for that tackling question. So we really appreciate you guys sending them in. What do we got on the way out? Some heart, Bob?
Nancy Wilson kicking it, man.
Yeah?
She's pretty good.
So we'll have some heart on the way out. We thank you for listening, and we'd like to thank our sponsor, Cannon & Dunphy. We'll talk to you again soon.